Broadcasting from Cincinnati, you're listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. All the news from the world of boxing right here.
Well, I'm talking to you the way I want to talk to you.
Now, here's your host, Eric Lorda.
Welcome to the Ringside Reporter Podcast, where we talk about the latest boxing news. If it's related to boxing, we'll talk about it here. My name is Eric Lorta, and I'm here with my co-host, Ringside Robert, and we have a great show for you today. And as always, you can catch us on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com. And today we're going to talk about Chavez Jr. He pulls out of his fight with Badu Jack. We'll tell you why.
I hope he pulls out of his boxing career.
Showtime releases their fight calendar for the next few months, and all I can say is, wow, wait till you hear the lineup on this card. Very good card. Our history lesson this week goes deep. Robert, we're going deep, all the way back to 1971.
The first fight I ever watched.
Ali Frazier won. But first, we get started with this incredible fight weekend that wasn't. We're going to start with the train wreck of the week. These are all planned fights that should have went off this weekend. Train wreck of the week, number one, Zab Judah. First time on the train wreck of the week, Zab Judah. Zab Judah and promoter Roy Engelbrecht were suspended by the Nevada State Athletic Commission on Friday, and the card Judah was scheduled to headline on Saturday night in Vegas was canceled. The NSAC executive director, Bob Bennett, said they provided the commission with false licensing documents. Bob Bennett also went on to say that both of them provided false information. He said also, that's as much information as I can give you, because it's pending litigation. Wow. So let me understand this. So him and his promoter, from what I understand, Zab and his promoter provided false documents, false licensing documents.
That is incredible. I mean,
who does that?
Look, number one, what kind of promoter are you to help your fighter in this endeavor? No wonder I've never heard of this promoter before.
Well, you know, he does work with K2. Is it K2? That's Golovkin's promotion, and that's also Klitschko's promotion. Yeah.
I wonder what Tom Loeffler thinks about that.
Yeah, I'm sure they're not very pleased. Loeffler did come out and say, though, that this will not affect the Triple G fight coming up because he's not that much of a, you know, he's not. You know, he works with them, but he's not K2. So,
and besides, the Triple G fight is not in Nevada; it's in California.
Yeah, yeah. But either way, man, this is just a really sad thing. And he's going to get suspended. They're both suspended now. And I can't imagine that they're going to go light on this thing.
As far as Zab Judah is concerned, after something like this, his career basically should be terminated, period.
Is this the third fight on his comeback? I mean, he was supposed to fight. This is like the third opponent or third time it's been rescheduled. Something like that. Something was always happening, whether injury or whatever the case happened. And this was like his third time. Dude, the gods, the boxing gods, are trying to tell you something.
Look, the last time he was in the boxing ring that I seen, when he gets thoroughly dominated, and I mean thoroughly dominated by Paulie Malignaggi, you have no business being in a boxing ring anymore. Nothing against Paulie, but let's be real. In their prime, Zab Judah would kill Paulie Malignaggi. But, Paulie thoroughly dominated him, even on the scorecards. Son, your career is over. Maybe you'll wind up doing some jail time over this. Hopefully your promoter will join you. I mean, this is just, and yet we want boxing to be a mainstream sport. How can it be a mainstream sport when things like this go on?
Yeah, this is a big deal, man. This card was on CBS Sports and everything like that. It was set to come off, and that's a rough one for sure, man. I can't, I kind of wonder, I don't know that he'll see any time out of this, but he's going to get suspended, and whatever his suspension is going to be, I guarantee that should take him to the end of his career.
And for those of you that
not already there, you know.
And for those of you wrestling fans, I would suggest tuning in to Jim Ross on Tuesday night. He does a podcast, and Jim Ross was supposed to call these fights. Well, I'm sure he's going to have something to say on Tuesday night. Uh, his His podcast airs at 9 p.m. Eastern for those that are interested, so check it out. You know, I'm sure he's going to have something to say on this.
Yeah, I don't know what he'll say. I mean, he was the announcer. I mean, I tell you what, if I was Jim Ross, I'd be jumping for joy. I mean, he got paid anyway, so you know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, he got paid. So
I mean, hell, he might have turned it into a nice weekend in Vegas. Who knows? You know,
that's right. More time for gambling and hookers, I guess. There you go.
There you go, Jim Ross. And we've got a whole list of train wrecks. So that's just number one.
Number two. Former middleweight title holder David Lemieux, latest Triple G victim, missed the contracted weight by 2.6 pounds at Friday afternoon's weigh-in at the casino in Montreal for his bout against James De La Rosa. The fight was scheduled to go off on Saturday. It was canceled. And because he was overweight, the contracted weight was 162, which James De La Rosa weighed. Okay. However, Lemieux came in at 165.8, so 2.6 pounds heavier. Yeah, I understand. He gets a pound allowance, so that's why it's 2.6. So he kind of came in at 163. Instead, he came in at 165. So I guess 2.8 pounds over.
Yeah, and James De La Rosa.
Yeah, that's almost 3 pounds.
Yeah, James De La Rosa, to his intelligence, said, no, thank you, you know. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, you know? Lemieux's people, after the weigh-in, Lemieux's people tried to make a deal with De La Rosa and offer him more money to go ahead with the fight, but De La Rosa said, nope, I'm not doing it. He said that he wasn't comfortable fighting outside his contracted weight, so the fight was canceled.
I normally would jump all over a fighter, but in this case it was Lemieux's fault, so I don't blame James for this. I would back out too, I think.
De La Rosa has not fought since he was KO'd in December of 2014. Lemieux, far and away, was the biggest name on his record to date. For sure, he would have garnered the biggest check. De La Rosa's got a record of 23-3. I got to be honest here, man. I'm on the complete opposite side of this coin. I don't really get this. You know, so James De La Rosa walks away from the biggest payday and fight of his career over 2 pounds. 2 pounds. Do you honestly think 2 pounds was going to make a big difference in this fight?
No, not really.
The contracted weight, and I understand that he came in over, and that's fine. Yeah. And maybe he wasn't, you know, maybe he wasn't trying to make weight. Maybe he was just going to, you know, come in over. Look, do you want to fight or not? It's that simple. I mean, over two. I mean, if the guy came in, you know, and pulled Jose Luis Castillo and came in like 10 pounds overweight. Or like Floyd Mayweather when he fought Marquez and came in like 5 to 7 pounds overweight and said,
right.
You know, I'm just not losing it. You know,
right.
Do what you want. You want to fight or not, you know.
Right.
And you're going to flush that out, you know. I mean, you know, and then the promoters come to you and offer you more money. Guaranteed. This is the biggest purse of his career. Guaranteed.
I understand, Eric, but I'm looking at it from a logical point of view. Yes, did he walk away from his biggest payday? Yes, he did. But he was also fighting in the other guy's hometown, and he probably knew going into the fight, no matter if Lemieux made weight or not, that he had to basically either look impressive or knock Lemieux out to even get a decision. So I bet that they renegotiate this, and maybe this fight is rescheduled at a later date.
Guaranteed, De La Rosa's not getting another shot. Guaranteed.
Okay.
If I was Lemieux's people, this guy is done. You know, and I'm not giving Lemieux a pass for this. All you had to do was make weight and stay away from the burgers. You know, I mean.
And you haven't been in the ring yourself since last October. What have you been doing for the last 5 months?
Right.
You know.
I think it's apparent what he was doing, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
yeah.
You know, in all fairness, I mean, he was 165, you know, which isn't – he's not fat. You know, it's David Lemieux.
Right.
Everybody's seen him. He's muscled up and everything. You know, so
right.
He's got to extract a lot of water weight and everything like that. He couldn't make the weight,
right.
Whatever reason, whether he was sick in training, he just ate too much, whatever. It's immaterial. It's unprofessional. He should have made the weight. That being said – what's even, to me, even more unprofessional is pulling out because of those 2 pounds. And I think the card went on, but you didn't get paid. You didn't get paid. Lemieux didn't get paid. Nobody got paid. So all your training expenses now coming out of your pocket, everything, you know, all of this You know, no, because nobody wants the fight canceled. You know, because nobody gets paid. And so you just cost yourself the biggest payday of your life and probably your career, because you're not going to get a shot like this, because other guys are going to look at that and say, yeah, I don't know. You know, at least I would. And Lemieux's people, no, guaranteed this guy doesn't get another shot like that.
Well, Eric, I can see both sides of this, you know, so
I mean,
I'm glad
you,
we...
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Do you think 2 pounds would have made the difference in a fight? Because on the scale, he's 2 pounds heavier. I mean, I can understand. I mean, I would penalize him. I would take him, you know, or Chavez Jr. is another one that comes in overweight. But I would take him and say, okay, I want some money. I want a lot of money if you want this fight to go on. And they did that. And he said,
I don't think the 2 pounds would have made any difference. But remember, they normally have weigh-ins on a Friday. What would his weight would have been on Saturday? How much of a difference would there have been?
Who cares? I mean, I don't think there would have been much difference because clearly he couldn't make the weight. I mean, if anything, it would have fell on De La Rosa. I wouldn't have been surprised if De La Rosa was heavier because you know he had to cut the weight and rehydrate.
Yeah,
Lemieux didn't cut the weight.
No, I know. I can just see both sides of this. I'm glad we're disagreeing because people might complain that we agree too much, you know.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, here's my thing, man. I mean, he just walked away from the biggest payday of his career, over 2 pounds. And I tell you what, man, maybe he should be, look for a new line of work, man. I'm not sure that fighting's for him.
Maybe not. I've seen him fight a few times. He looks like he could be a decent fighter, but walking away from something like this is going to cause him a problem.
Yeah, you can't do that. I mean, and when you do that, I mean, it's like, you know, it's not like, again, man, it's not like the guy came in 5 to 10 pounds over. He came in 2 pounds over, 3 pounds if you really get technical about it.
Right.
But again, man, it's, you know, you're going to walk away from that big of a payday because you know they offered him money to stay because they got... You know, because you got refunds and everything like that. I mean, all that stuff's got to go out, man.
And Montreal, they normally show up for their fighters, so I'm sure they had to get.
I'm sure they had a decent crowd. You know.
Yeah.
Guaranteed, so, man. Yeah. That guy just wrote his retirement ticket right there.
That's right.
All right, and last but not least here. Guillermo Rigondeaux had to pull out of his fight this weekend, as we know he was scheduled to fight in London. On an undercard here, of the undercard of the, what was that guy's name? I don't know. Who cares?
I'm trying to think, but anyway, I can't think of his name at the moment.
He's a lighter guy. I can't remember his name either.
But he
was on the undercard of that fight. All right.
Yeah.
So he had been training. Apparently, he had been training in Russia at the time, and then for whatever reason, couldn't get a visa. So, you know, he couldn't make the fight. He had to pull out of the fight. Three fights canceled this weekend over stupidity, you know.
Here's the stupid thing about Rigondeaux. He's always had horrible, horrible management in his corner.
Oh, yeah.
We reported on this fight happening a month ago or more.
Why couldn't
they have did what they were supposed to do to make sure that he could leave, go from one country to another? I mean, how difficult is that? That's the manager's and promoter's job, to make sure that all the fighters have their documents in order. I mean, here we got a document case with an American who gives illegal documents to the state of Nevada, and now we have a Cuban who's in Russia who can't get into England. I mean, what's up with that?
And, you know, I tell you what, I blame his manager, of course, and I blame his promoter for this. This is ridiculous. All he has to do is train and fight. That's it. That's his gig. He's got managers and he's got promoters to prevent this kind of stuff from happening. You know, this is why he's paying him a cut. He shouldn't have to go over there and, you know, worry about a visa or whatever. He has to show up and sign his name. That's one thing. But he should focus on training and focus on getting on a plane, getting over there. That's that, you know, and the fight's done. He has to fight. Your manager and a promoter should take care of all this. You know who his promoter is?
Rock Nation.
How do they let this happen?
Yeah. Now, here's a boxing career that has been totally destroyed by complete, utter incompetence and mismanagement. Any potential that Guillermo Rigondeaux ever had of being a successful professional has been totally destroyed by the incompetence of people surrounding him. And I kind of blame him for this. Yeah, he's in different countries and, you know, he may not understand a lot of things. But there's a time and a place when a fighter's got to take charge of his career and make sure that his career is on the right path. And he always puts his career in the hands of people that don't know what the hell they're doing.
Right. I think that's the big thing. I mean, he has been just plagued by management issues, promotional issues, you know, and not to mention, you know, his style, while I like it, isn't really the most crowd-pleasing style you can have. You know, I think it's a very niche style. I mean, if you like, say, the way Mayweather boxes, or you like the way Regan, they box pretty much the same way. They hit and I can hit, you know, and not very crowd-pleasing, got to tell you.
And unfortunately, it doesn't draw very good television ratings either.
No, not at all.
Especially if the crowd at the Triple G David Lemieux pay-per-view was any indication, you know, I mean, they couldn't wait for that fight to get over, I mean, when he was on that undercard. I don't know what you do. I kind of feel bad for all these Cubans that defect and come over here and become professional fighters. Some of them are very successful because they get with the right people, but then you have others like Rigondeaux that for whatever reason wind up with the wrong kind of people. And Andes Lora is starting to fall into that same category. It has been several months since he's been in the ring. The last time he was in the ring was Thanksgiving. What's wrong with these Cuban fighters? How do they get themselves placed in situations where they don't have any say-so over their careers?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, like, Rigondeaux, you know, really is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the world, you know, but it's his style. I mean, nobody, you know, and it's not, I mean, I don't think boxers are afraid of him. I think managers are afraid of him. And not only that, I mean, and, you know, look at Mayweather. I mean, like, you know, he draws people because of his personality. It's certainly not, you know, he draws people because of his personality, because Rigo has just as many skills as he does.
Yeah.
I mean, he really does. I mean, they're just master boxers, you know.
Right.
But Rigo, he doesn't speak English. He doesn't really have a big personality that people can relate to. And in the same with Lara. Lara really doesn't have that either. You know,
no.
So they come over and they are really good fighters, but they can't. There's got to be more to that if you want to, you know, cross that path into superstardom. You know,
doesn't boxing promoters and managers and people that surround them with all these foreign fighters like Rigondeaux, Lora, Triple G, Kovalev. You name the foreign. Don't they all have, before they get them into working on their careers over here, don't they have to learn and learn how to speak English before they start their careers? Because you can't market these guys the way they deserve to be marketed. I mean, look, if Kovalev and Golovkin and people like that could speak better English, they would be massive superstars over here. But because of the lack of language and the fact that they all allow people to make decisions for them, it sounds like they can't be promoted the way that they should. And I'm mainly focusing on I threw Triple G and Kovalev in here just for the part of the discussion, but mainly the Cubans. I mean, the only reason why we know about Luis Ortiz is he's able to knock people out, but he's not able to speak English either. How do you promote these guys when you have a language problem?
Well, Luis Ortiz is a really easier guy to promote because, like you said, he knocks people out, and that translates into any language.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, however, Rigondeaux and Lara, who have that, you know, style where they want to hit and move and hit and move and not get hit and not get two exchanges, which, you know, is not, again, man, it's not the most crowd-pleasing the way to go about it. And then you got, guys like Frampton, who just won, will just let that WBA title go rather than defend it against Rigo, you know, because he's not going to bring any money. That's the other thing, is that he's not bringing the money in that the other fighters – like Triple G, man, if you're going to fight Triple G, you're going to get paid. That's what he is now. He's going to gonna get paid, right?
Yeah.
So the same thing, but with Rigo, you fight him, I mean, you know, that's a lot of risk, not much reward, man.
And now that Rigo doesn't have a visa, even if Frampton did want to take the fight, how in the hell would that fight come off?
I mean, doesn't take – I mean, I've never really got a visa before, but I can't imagine it takes that long.
No.
I mean, he can – I mean, he could definitely get past that, you know.
I mean, hell, I used to live in Canada, Eric, and before I traveled over there, I had to get a passport. It wasn't that complicated.
Right.
And I'm sure a visa is even less complicated than a passport is.
Right.
You know?
You know, I mean, but it takes paperwork, and it takes, you know, you going down there and getting it, you know, getting it done. You can't go down there, you know, 2 hours before your plane is scheduled to leave and try to get one, you know?
No. So, I don't understand.
I mean, like, as a promoter, as managers, and, you know, getting this fight off and knowing everybody's going to get paid from it, why do you not make sure this is done? I think that's just unacceptable.
The more we hear about Roc Nation and the way they promote things, I'm wondering if they should even be in the boxing business. You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Who was it? Speaking of Roc Nation, so the pay-per-view that they're – and it's not finalized yet, but the pay-per-view they're looking at, I guess in June or whatever, whenever Puerto Rican Independence Day is.
Yeah, June 11th.
June 11th, yeah. So the fight they're looking at – and again, it's nothing's concrete. It's just kind of been floated out there. Is Miguel Cotto versus James Kirkland on paper?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that would be June 18th. That's why they reserved the Barclays. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
James
I've heard
on
that.
Pay per view. Are you serious? Yeah. Are you serious?
Oh my.
That's your big fight. That's your big fight. Dude, come on.
Oh, can you believe that?
That's on pay-per-view?
I mean, the last time we seen James Kirkland, he
I don't even know if I'd watch that if it was on HBO.
Yeah. Oh, that's incredible.
Last time I saw James Kirkland, he was getting murked by Canelo.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, come on, man. That's ridiculous.
And the week before that's at the Barclays on the 18th. And then the week before that, you got Felix Verdejo on the actual Puerto Rican weekend. He's got the big garden booked. Not the small garden. He's got the big garden booked.
Any so, who he's going to fight?
No, but it's supposed to be for a title.
We'll see.
It's supposed to be for a title.
Yeah,
you know?
But, Roc Nation, I don't know what they're doing. They're going to fold here pretty soon. The only one keeping them afloat is going to be Andre Ward, and who knows there, you know?
That would make Andre Ward a free agent again.
Yeah, well, he deals with that, you know. All right, so those
are
train wrecks of the week here. Let's take a look at the upcoming fights this weekend, which is pretty much non-existent. There's one on Tuesday, which this podcast will come out after that, on Fox Sports 1, Sergey Lapinets versus Levon Gamichaba, maybe? I don't know. Something. I don't know.
Where the hell is that fight taking place?
Nice, California. Or Nice, California.
Oh, Nice. Oh, my God. That's down near the Mojave Desert. Good God. They must be using an Indian casino. That would be my guess.
And on March 18th, I believe that's Friday. Is that correct? Friday?
That would be a Friday.
All right. Alejandro on Telemundo, Robbie's favorite channel. Alejandro Hernandez versus Asayo Carranza, 10 rounds, junior featherweight. That's right.
Yeah.
And then how does that fight make it to TV, and this next one doesn't? Jesse Hart versus Deshaun Johnson, 10 rounds, super middleweights. Jesse Hart, another up-and-comer, it's going to take place in Philadelphia. Why that fight's not on TV? Hey, you guess.
That sounds like I was going to say that would sound like a True TV or Spike thing, but True TV is being used for the NCAA tournament this week. So.
Right. Yeah. That's why it's going to be slow too. That makes sense. Let's see here on March 19th, Saturday. Oh, here we go. Unimas from Houston the fight of the week right here. One, Baby Bull Diaz versus Fernando Garcia. 8 rounds lightweight. Wow, he's fighting 8 rounds.
Okay, Eric, I can answer your question. If Diaz wins this fight, he will be Verdejo's opponent on June 11th.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I wish I was joking, but no, I am serious.
God.
Yep. Well, wow. Steve Kim, by the way, had the same reaction to yours.
Unbelievable. Juan Diaz, come on. If he can't beat, I hope Fernando Garcia beats him, but whatever, you know.
Now, look, I know the Baby Bull because I've seen the Baby Bull fight when he was making, when he made his debut and was very successful, but you have to wonder, hasn't he been out of the ring for several years? Well, what has he got left?
And why would he
even be considered for someone like Felix Verdejo?
I have no idea. I have no idea. Why would you put Felix Verdejo in the same ring as that guy? That doesn't make any sense. I mean, Verdejo is an up-and-comer, supposed to be the next Puerto Rican superstar. You know, I mean, you want to give him, you know, fighters. You know, somebody who's going to give him some tests. Juan Diaz is not that guy.
Now, Verdejo also has a tune-up fight, if you want to call it that, on April 16th in Puerto Rico. And if he gets by that, which everybody expects he does,
right,
then like I said, Juan Diaz is highly favored to be Verdejo's opponent in June in New York, provided that Diaz wins Saturday.
It's top rank in HBO matchmaking right there. Also, Mike Alvarado is on that card. Mike, mile high, Mike, your boy. Mike Alvarado versus Saul Corral, 8 rounds, welterweights. I'm shocked that Mike Alvarado got a license, all right? I am shocked he even got a license to fight again.
I want to know what his drug test results are. Is he like the Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver that just got suspended for a year?
Oh, my God. Yeah, so, that's our – let me just tell you what the state boxing is in. That's our marquee card this weekend. That is like the card to watch on Unimas.
Well, I'm not watching it.
Yeah.
On March 19th, I'm going to watch the heavyweight championship of the world between the Golden State Warriors and San Antonio Spurs. The two teams have the best record in the NBA. They're going to have a showdown on Saturday night. That's on ABC TV. That'll be the heavyweight fight of the weekend.
There you go, man. Either that or watch some March Madness or something.
Yeah.
Out of boxing this weekend because they got nothing going on.
Yeah. I thought there was supposed to be a show box card this weekend, but nope.
Yeah. So. Also, March 19th, from Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. Now, I don't know that this will be televised. This will be televised, from what I understand, this is going to be televised on the island. I don't know that it's going to be televised here. Nicholas Kalea versus Samito Santana. Nicholas Kalea is 8-0 with 5 knockouts, and he's an up-and-coming boxer. And he messaged me on Twitter and wanted to let me know he was fighting. And so I told him I would announce it on the show. So good luck, Nicholas. I hope you do well, and I hope you keep that winning streak intact.
Maybe we can get him on the show, Eric.
Hey, maybe so. Maybe so.
Yeah.
After this fight, he's going to be too big to blow up. He's going to blow up after this fight. He'd be too big to come on the show. Doesn't want to miss an interview. Small time, son.
we've gotten Tom Loeffler. We got
Tom Loeffler. I'm thinking to myself, we got Deontay Wilder. We can get anybody. You're in it with Tom Loeffler.
Yeah, that's true. Well, hey, we did get Deontay. That's right.
He's a friend of the show.
You know,
he's a friend of the show, son. We'll talk about him a little bit too.
Yeah, we have news coming up about him.
Absolutely. So, all right, let's move along to our history lesson here. The fight of the century. Another fight of the century.
First fight I ever watched, man.
It seems like there's a fight of the century like every 10 years or so, you know.
Well, this one lived up to the billing.
March 8th, 1971, Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier, number one. Madison Square Garden, man. This was, I tell you what, man, this was something else. This was the spectacle leading into this fight. I mean, given the fact that Muhammad Ali, you know, had spent 3 years out of the ring. He was now, you know, he had a couple of tune-up fights. He's now on his way back and fighting the heavyweight champion of the world. And this was really the intriguing part about this fight is that both guys, I mean, nobody ever beat Ali for the title. I mean, nobody ever beat him. And Frazier, you know, came out. He was the first heavyweight champion, I believe, in the Olympics.
That is correct.
USA's first heavyweight. Ali was a light heavyweight champion. He was the first heavyweight champion. And, you know, man, Joe Frazier never really got the respect he deserved, I think, until after this fight, you know.
Yep.
You know, this reminded me, though, a lot of it, man, you know, leading into the fight and the buildup and the hoopla surrounding it reminded me a lot of the Holmes-Cooney fight. It really did, man. A lot of the buildup and everything like that. If you were rooting, and it was written down here, and I got it written down because it was kind of powerful when I read it. I was like, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And I don't, you know,
right.
It's like one of those things. If you were rooting for Ali, you were black, liberal, or young, and
you're
also
correct.
Against the Vietnam War and for the civil rights movement. If you
back
Joe Frazier. If you back Joe Frazier, you are representative of white conservative America.
That is correct.
Seriously?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, seriously?
Eric,
I mean,
that's how it was back then.
If you were just from Philadelphia, you were a Joe Frazier fan, that meant he was representing white America? That doesn't make any sense, man.
I know that, but that's how the press and everybody played this.
Yeah, and oh my gosh. There was a great documentary on HBO, and I'll post it tomorrow to your phone thing, the Ringside Robbie's Corner.
Okay.
I'll post it there. It was the One Nation Divisible. I think it's One Nation Divisible, I think it is. It was an HBO documentary about Ali and Frazier, the first fight. And it was very interesting. I mean, really interesting. And it really went to, like, the social aspects and everything like that. And about how the fighters were treated, how people viewed, you know, Joe Frazier and how people viewed Muhammad Ali and everything like that.
Yeah, well, so what you'll want to do, because we normally put the history lessons, the ones we talk about here on the show, on option two. So what you want to do is you want to put the fight and then you want to put the documentary on the same option. That way people can check out both.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
we'll figure it out.
There you go.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
So
yeah, man. But you know, the fight itself actually was one of the few things that lived up to it. This is one of the first fights, I believe, maybe the first fight that had closed circuit, where people were watching it everywhere because Madison Square was, you know, obviously sold out. But people were watching
It was in movie theaters.
Right.
Because remember when Ali fought. I remember when Ali Frazier and Foreman and Holmes and all those guys fought. Remember, a lot of their fights were shown on tape delay basis on ABC's Wide World of Sports.
Right.
So if the fights took place during the week, like this one did, I think this one took place on a Monday, if I'm not mistaken. You know, if you wanted to see the fight live, you normally had to go to a movie theater to watch it, and then. But if you couldn't go, you had to wait till Saturday afternoon when ABC's Wide World of Sports came on, because that's when they showed you the fights.
Right. And did you ever see the? And I can't remember what the. Maybe it's. I can't remember the name of the movie, but the movie was with Muhammad Ali and Customato. It was almost like a documentary kind of thing.
No.
Okay. Well, Customato had said to Ali, he says, I don't think you can beat in the movie. He said, I don't think you can beat Frazier because your skills have diminished over 3 years. And it made a lot of sense that, you know, that he can't come back and perform at that level again. And it was very true in this fight because if you notice, he was very good in the first five or six rounds. That's not to say Frazier didn't win any of those rounds, but he was very good in the first round.
If memory serves correctly, wasn't the first fight only 12 rounds, or were they all 3-15? I know one of them was
first
at least
was
only
15. First fight was 15 rounds.
Okay.
The second fight, I think, was only 12 rounds
because
it was a non-title fight.
Right.
And then fight was the thriller, I guess, the one in Manila. I think that wasn't that 15 rounds, but it didn't go 15.
Yeah, that was 15 rounds too,
yeah.
But look, we don't want to get political here, but Ali basically lost his title because he didn't want to serve in the military. He was basically forced out of the ring for 3 years.
Which, you know, I mean, and a lot of people call him a hero and stuff like that, but, you know, and I think what he did was heroic, but, you know, look, man, I mean, everybody who got drafted, nobody wanted to go. I mean, to a person, if you ask him, hey, do you want to go where people are shooting at you and everything like that? No, nobody wants to go.
A lot of people went to Canada, Eric, to avoid the draft.
Absolutely, you know. You know, but if somebody, you know, if you were drafted, nobody wanted to go, you know.
No.
But he came up and he says, hey, I'm not going, and that's that, and, you know, this and that, and, you know, chips kind of fell where they did, you know. So
yeah.
I don't, you know, the fact that they kept him out of boxing for 3 years, I mean, hey, Joe Louis went. You know, the fact that they kept him out of boxing, you know, I mean, that's kind of the risk you run when you speak your mind and you do, you know. Again,
yeah,
you know, that's what happens when you do it.
I'm just wondering, you know, what his career would have been like had it not been interrupted. Would we have seen some of these great fights that he wound up being in, you know, because of the 3-year delay?
I don't know, man. Yeah, I imagine he would have been. I mean, but you kind of wonder, you know, yeah, you wonder how it would have been, how the landscape would have changed, you know.
Because, for example, he would have never fought Larry Holmes because I don't think he would have stuck around long enough.
No, no way. But, you know, who knows? I mean, Ali, you know, was a great, great fighter. But at the same time, I mean, when you're great at something, you don't ever think you can be beat. You always think you could do it better. I mean, look at Michael Jordan. I mean, who came back and played for the Wizards, you know? And, I mean, it was like, you know, or thought he could play baseball.
That's after he tried baseball and realized that he wasn't great at that. So,
right, you know, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, when you're that successful at something, you know, you don't think you can be beat. And, you know, time catches up to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, so they you don't think you can be beat. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he did fight Larry Holmes at that point, you know what I mean? It wouldn't have shocked me.
No.
But he did gas out in this fight. He looked very tired after 6 rounds.
Yeah.
And all the moving and all the moving and stuff like that, the punches, the moving and the punches from Frazier, you know, the body shots, the head shots, everything, that takes it out of you too. Frazier had just a demon left hook. And, you know.
I learned a lot about both guys in this fight because, you know, like I said, this was the very first fight I ever watched. And, you know, so, you know, being a kid, only like 6 years old back then, you know, it was a total experience for me. My dad said, we're going to watch this and we're going to go. And so we went and, you know. I'll never forget that fight. And, you know, it was one of the best ones I ever seen. Of course, I loved all three of those fights. And any fight that Ali was in after that, you know, I was behind him because he knew how to put on a show, and he always brought the best out of the people that were in the ring with him.
You know? I mean, it's like people got up to fight him. You know, I mean, they. You know, you could take. I'm convinced that you could take an average fighter, put him in the ring with Ali, and he became a better fighter because of that. You know what I mean? He just brought out the best in people. You know, and the fact that, you know, you elevated your game because you knew he was going to come with a big game. You know.
Well, George Foreman still talks about it to this day. He was convinced that he was going to win that fight. He didn't think Ali was anything, and you know, after being in the ring with him for what was it, 8 rounds, he said that totally changed his opinion. He knew there was no way that he was going to beat him out after being in the ring with him.
This fight, too, the Ali Frazier one had the shot heard around the world. And this was in the 15th round. The fight was pretty much, it was a close fight. It was a close fight. And even on the scorecards, it was fairly close. But Frazier had it. I mean, Ali needed a knockout to win. There's no question about that. Frazier was going to win this fight. And Frazier hit him with one of the biggest left hooks you are likely to see.
I'll never forget it.
He hit Ali, and Ali just fell. I mean, like he was shot. I mean, just dropped. Like the legs went out from under. Boom, you know. I mean, and he got right back up. I mean, that was one of the meanest left hooks I had ever seen in my life. And he got right back up like it was nothing, man. And was able to last out the round or whatever. Frazier, of course, wins the heavy, you know, obviously he retains his heavyweight championship, undisputed yep. champion, won the event, won the fight, and what a fight that was.
No, one of the best fights of all time. I will never forget it. And all I can say is, what a hell of a way to get introduced to one of my favorite sports.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. How could you? Yeah, exactly. I mean, if yeah. you're going to see a fight for the first time, man, yeah, that's the one to see. That's for sure.
And if you want to bring a new boxing fans into boxing, just show them that fight.
Yeah.
That's all they need to see, you know?
Incredible fight, man. Incredible trilogy,
yep.
you know? Just a great
yep.
trilogy, great man. Yeah.
You know, and I don't know about you, Eric, but I sure miss those trilogies. You know, I miss having fighters that you know that once they step in the ring for the first time, you know that they're going to do it at least three times.
Yeah. There's something about that, you know, watching those two that they're on such – you know, that their styles, you know, kind of foil each other in the sense that, you know, their styles, you know, one guy has a style that just nullifies the other style, you know, and
yep.
they can fight 100 times and it's going to be close no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And none of their fights were blowouts. Yeah, they
no.
were all close, you know.
Every one of them.
I mean.
Even a third one was real close. And they said in that third one in Manila, they said that, you know, if Frazier hadn't quit, he just quit first, you know,
yeah.
or they just stopped the fight first. Frazier didn't quit, obviously, but they stopped the fight first. Frazier apparently
right.
was furious at his corner, at his corner
oh, Eddie,
and everything. Eddie Futch,
Eddie
yeah.
Joe never forgave Futch after that. He really held it against him.
Yeah, and those
for,
two,
for a long time.
And Frazier, I mean, he called you know, he Ali called Frazier a lot of bad names and a lot of, you know, disparaging comments and everything. Frazier never forgot that, man.
No, nope.
Frazier never forgot that he held a grudge all that
oh,
time,
yeah.
man. And yeah, I think I would imagine probably up until his death, he still didn't have any love for Muhammad
well,
Ali, man.
When Ali found out how sick Joe was, he actually went to Joe. Before he got really sick, and apparently they patched up everything, so Joe was able to die with no grudges.
Well, that's good, man. I'm glad
yeah.
to hear that. I didn't know that, but I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
You know.
And Muhammad Ali basically told Joe, hey, you know, I was doing my part to promote our fights. Nothing I said was personal against you, but that was how I promoted fights. And
well,
Joe finally understood that after all those years.
Well, and Muhammad Ali, I don't know if it was after the first fight or the third fight, it was one of those fights, told
yeah.
Marvis Frazier, Joe's son, that
yeah.
you know, he said, I'm sorry. You know, he said, if I caused anybody any, you know, he said, I'm sorry, you know, and he apologized to Marvis and everything like that, you know. And apparently Marvis told Joe, and Joe's like, well, how come he didn't talk to me? Yeah, and nothing Ali would have done was good enough, you know. And but that's,
yeah.
you know, hey, look, he's got to take that on the chin because no matter what happens, I mean, you said a lot of hurtful things about him and his kids got
no,
fights
that's
for it. And, you know, that's a tough thing to deal with, man.
That's why I wanted to bring it up. They did patch up their differences, and Ali made it right with Joe and his family before Joe died a couple of years. I think it was 2011 when he.
Yeah. Well, that's
yeah.
good, man. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Good history lesson here. Let's move on to our news and rumors section here. Robbie's boy, Chavez Jr., pulls out of the fight with Badu Jack with a heel injury.
He ain't my boy because he just saved himself from an execution.
Cause,
Now, what happens to Jack here? Because I'm sure that this was a voluntary.
Lucian Bute is next for Badu Jack.
Oh, well, he'll kill him.
Yeah,
no
I
problem.
Think so, too. Yeah, so he pulls out with a heel injury. I'm not sure, you know, heel injury in quotes here, buddy, because I think he stepped in a dime bag of weed. That's probably his heel injury.
He probably contacted his drug source, Mike Alvarado, you know.
Yeah, right. That high altitude
yeah.
in Colorado line.
Yeah.
Yeah, he needs to hang it up, son. He's not taking it seriously. He just broke camp. Right in the middle of training camp, just broke out and then calls out of the fight, man.
Come on, man.
Well, if I'm Robert Garcia, like I said last week, go back to his gym and never take his calls.
Hey, I don't know about that, man, because Chavez Jr. garners the money. You know he got paid, so keep wasting time.
Eric, if you were a big-name trainer like that, would you, seriously, even though you know you get paid, would you continue to work with somebody that doesn't take the sport seriously? Wouldn't you have to finally just say no?
I think so, yeah. I think at some point you do. I think at some point you do, because, but, you know, I mean, you know, from Garcia's standpoint, I mean, you got to think about it. I mean, this guy is not getting, you know, $2,000 a fight. I mean, this guy is getting 50, you know, I mean, 50, I mean, he's getting over, you know, he's getting more, obviously more than 50,000. He's getting millions of dollars to fight.
No, I know.
But so he gets a cut of that, man. That's a big cut, you know, and he probably at this point gets X amount of dollars for camp. He probably doesn't get a percentage of his purse. He probably gets X amount of dollars for camp and fight. But, yeah, man, it's still quite a bit of change. He's bringing in more money than any of his other fighters, I'm sure. I mean, who else has he got? Who else has he got?
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But, no, if I'm a trainer in the future, when this guy calls, I seriously have to consider what my answer would be. Because, I mean, my God, he's gone through... I don't know how many trainers, and he's been crappy to each and every one of them. I mean,
well, not even just trainers, all right? He hasn't gone through just trainers. He's gone through the best trainers in the world, man. I mean,
exactly.
Freddie Roach, Joe Goosen. I mean, and now he's with Robert Garcia. I mean, these aren't like schlep trainers, man. These guys are good trainers. Not to mention your dad is the best Mexican, you know, considered by most to be the best Mexican fighter ever.
I think he even worked with Nacho Berenstain.
I think you're right. I think he did. Yeah. I absolutely think he did. And Nacho Berenstain, he's another one that's not, you know, some schlep or something like that. That's, again, the world-class trainer.
I mean, it's pretty bad when a couple of weeks ago your dad finally comes out and says, I washed my hands of him. He's not serious. I'm sorry, he's my son. He's pathetic to the Mexican people. I mean, I wanted my son to carry on my legacy, and he can't do. I mean, I don't know if you remember, but a couple of weeks ago, he gave a very derogatory interview and basically shredded his son. When he found out his son left camp, I guess Julio went off.
It's tough. I mean, I got to be honest, man. I feel for Junior. I really do. I mean, you think about it. You think about your dad being the greatest ever in Mexico, you know, and revered by those people. He's like Air Jordan is here. You know what I mean?
You talk about TBE. There's your TBE right there.
Right. I mean, exactly. And you know, he's revered here. He's revered in Mexico. He's probably bigger than Michael Jordan is in Mexico, you know?
Right.
And so you got his son, who also boxes, you know, and they say that it's better than his brother Omar, so they're going to make him. He's got the push, so he's going forward. I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on somebody.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure. And he doesn't fight like Chavez. I mean, you know, really, you know, you see him fight, and he really should be, you know, in my opinion, fight a different style, fight a taller style than what he fights.
Yeah.
You know, but whatever. I mean, the style works for him. But it's very like, you know, there's a lot of pressure put on this kid. You know, knowing that he can never be as good as his dad because he just doesn't have, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it. I mean, Chavez had to work for everything. He had everything there for him, you know. I mean, he had a lot of breaks for him, you know, his son. He had a lot of breaks for him. And that's, and I'm not criticizing that. It's just the way it is because of the family he grew up in. There's nothing wrong with that. Take the breaks.
No.
I mean, if you get breaks, take them. But
I mean,
you know,
when your dad wins over 100 fights, and wins what, 5 or 6 different world titles in what, 4 or 5 different weight classes,
something like that,
I mean,
something crazy,
you know, it's hard to live up to that. But Junior looks bad here because even though it's hard to live up to that kind of expectations, but when you burn through people and don't treat them well. I mean,
that's the big thing, and that's where the upbringing, in the sense that, like, having everything, you know, I don't want to say he was set out on a silver platter because I don't believe that's the case, but he had a lot of breaks going his way, and when you get a lot of breaks, you tend to not appreciate people. You tend to not appreciate things that are in front of you. You tend to blame people, you know, blame other people for things that you should be doing.
To put it bluntly, he's acted his whole life like a spoiled rich brat.
Right. You know. But like I said, man, it's tough. And we criticize him, forgetting that didn't he win a middleweight title? He won a super middleweight title? I mean, he's a titleist. I mean, he's a legit fighter, man. I mean, you put him in the ring, you know, you put him with the ring, you know, I guarantee the guy knows what he's doing. The guy can fight.
It's not
even a question of him not being able to, but he can fight.
Basically, Andrew Fonfora has been considered a much better fighter than he was before because he basically went in the ring and took apart Chavez that was out of shape.
Right.
You know, and meanwhile, Fonfora before that fought 12 hard rounds with the light heavyweight champion of the world, Stevenson
yeah.
and even knocked him down, but yet he wasn't considered, he's just another opponent, no big deal.
Right. Well, now public perception, yeah, he was just another opponent.
Yeah.
He's not coming back from this. Yeah.
But now boxing people take him more seriously because of what he was able to do to Chavez. I mean, Fonfora has gotten bigger fights since then, and he's won every single one of them since then. And now he's possibly in line for a rematch with Stevenson, and this time people are looking at it a lot differently because now he's not just a hand-picked opponent. Now he's a serious threat.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. And, I mean, and all that was on, you know, and I'm not saying that all of it should be dedicated to Chavez Jr., but a lot of it is dedicated to Chavez Jr. I mean, he was always the same fighter. He was the same fighter before he fought him, but he's the name. You know what I mean? He's the name. And that's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of pressure, man. That's a lot of pressure. Especially, who is it, Hagler? I think Hagler had the good line. Hagler had the greatest line, and he said, it's hard to get up and run and train when you're wearing silk pajamas. You know,
that's right.
And he's right.
Well,
man, I mean, you know, look, man, when you got your day ahead of you and, you know, hey, you know, you got all this stuff. What do I need to go out for? How do you stay hungry with that? That's a hard thing.
I think Marvin had the best retirement response of all. When he lost to Leonard, and he knew he wasn't going to get a rematch, what the hell did he do? I think it's the greatest thing ever. He just left the country and said, I'm done. You know, it's like...
I'll never forget that, man. I mean, look, he walks it like he talks it, man, because to be that angry about something... Because you see all these memes going around, like, if Trump wins, I'm going to leave the country, or if Hillary wins, I'm leaving the country, I'm going to Canada or Peru or wherever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He just left. He said, you know what, that's it, I'm done. This is basically a sport decision. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he was having, you know, like bill collectors were coming to get him or something like that. I mean, anything was going on in his life. He lost a boxing decision and said, I'm leaving the country. Three people made the decision that you lost that fight. And he said, you know what, those three people represent the U.S., I'm leaving. And he just got on a plane, hopped out, he's gone. That's it, no more Hagler. He said, that's it.
Yeah, and Marvin, because the other when you put up the Hagler-Hearns fight, I listened to it again, and I love the interview after the fight. He said, "Look, I am in pursuit of Carlos Monzon's consecutive title defenses here. I want to break that record." Well, Sugar Ray Leonard stopped him from doing that, and he was so disgusted that was taken away from him, he just said, the hell with it. I have no more reason to fight. I can't break that record anymore. I'm just going to leave the country. You know, I'm done.
I just left, not even leave boxing, just left the country. You know, he's like, I'm going to leave boxing and the country. You can have everything, you know.
Yeah.
He just left now. Where's he at, Italy now or France?
He's in Italy, and he's like a billionaire over there now with all the stuff he's doing.
Probably got like a harem of chicks by him and everything like that. Got like a Ferraris everywhere, and he's probably big time over there, son.
Yeah, and
working at soap operas or something like that over there. He's like a big time soap opera guy.
Yeah, soap opera movies, and you know, and doing all kinds of things. He's got a winery over there now, and doing all kinds of things. That's the ultimate ending the boxing. Is like, okay, I'm just done. I'm leaving the country. See you guys. And as far as I know, he's never been back to this country.
That's so great. That's so great. I mean, I know he's been back, but I don't know if, like I said, I mean, I don't think he's spent any time here. I think he goes right back over there. I mean, because I saw him, he was on a PBC for something or whatever. But yeah, man.
But I mean, let's face it. If you want Marvin to do anything, you got to show lots of green, or he ain't gonna do it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on here.
Victor,
what else?
Vicious Victor Ortiz, your boy. Versus Andre Berto 2 is set for April 30th. I don't even know if I'll watch it because it's not going to be on I know it'll be Showtime or HBO or something like that. I'm kind of debating on whether or not to even watch it.
Well,
Andre,
you know what?
Come on, man.
The first one was so great. How in the these two have been through a lot since then. I think it's great that they're having a rematch, but this is. This should have been rematched right after the first one, man. And I think it was supposed to be, but then Victor, he made the unfortunate decision, if I remember correctly, to take the fight against Josecito Lopez. And, of course, that was the fight where Lopez broke Victor's jaw, and Victor hasn't been the same since.
You know, I tell you what, man, both of these guys, they need to go. I mean, I'm surprised. I'm shocked Berto's fighting again, man. I mean, he had a big payday with Floyd, so, and he was on the comeback. He was getting beat by Lopez before he came out and knocked him out. I mean, he was losing that fight. Clearly lost the Floyd fight. And I don't know what he's fighting for. I don't even know what Victor Ortiz was fighting for, to be honest.
I don't know. I don't know why they're doing it again. But if there's nothing else going on that night, I might watch it. Who knows? But remember, baseball season will be going on then, so I might just decide to watch a baseball game. Who knows? You know?
So the Mets are on. I'm watching them. Roy Jones Jr. has an opponent for his March 20th fight. Who is he fighting? A man by the name of Viron Phillips. Phillips is an MMA fighter with a record of 5-3. All three losses have been by decision. No way this guy wins. If he wins, he gets $100,000. Because the commission, remember the commission put the kibosh on the fighting a fan thing?
Right.
Because, they're not, it's just a bad idea. You know, go figure.
And keep this in mind. This fight is taking place in Arizona. And Arizona is not known for big boxing cards, so Roy probably thought he could get away with something in Arizona.
Good for
Arizona for not allowing it, but this is going to be a complete mismatch. This is a guaranteed W for Roy, and I wish it wasn't, because I wish somebody would send Roy the message, you can't fight anymore.
Listen, he's been knocked out against every good opponent he's faced, lately. He's been knocked out. I mean, he's been put to sleep,
I mean, as we discussed last week in our history lesson, the last significant fight of Roy Jones' career was when he beat the quiet man, John Ruiz.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what has possessed him to continue fighting because he keeps losing.
Yeah, I don't quite understand it either. This should be a pretty good, but now, he's losing to world-class opposition. I mean, it's not like he's losing to bums, but at the same time, Viron Phillips does not fit that bill.
No.
I know he's an MMA fighter, he's 5-3, and I know in MMA you have to, box, you have to, know how to box, do Muay Thai and all that other stuff. Still not going to help him here.
Nope.
The thing is, man, is that there's a lot of good boxers in MMA. There really is. Nick Diaz, Nate Diaz, those are both two boxers that come to mind already. KJ Nunes, another boxer that comes to mind that's in MMA, who have the boxing skills, really good, legitimate boxing skills.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I don't think any one of them could beat a top 10 guy because they don't train in boxing. You know what I mean?
Right.
They train in boxing a little bit. They don't train day after day like Jones has from the time he was six. You know.
But Roy is, 46 years old. I mean, there is going to come a time where he's going to step in the ring, and Father Time is going to say, son, you can't do it anymore, and he's going to lose to somebody that he's not supposed to lose to.
Yeah, well, I think that time has come and gone. I mean, Glenkoff Johnson, he wasn't supposed to lose to, and he lost to.
Right.
He's definitely... He's definitely past his best days for sure, but he should have enough to handle Vyron Phillips. I think Phillips is going to come out aggressive because that's what he knows. He has to take him out for $100,000 or win the fight for $100,000.
Because Phillips is going to be so aggressive, Roy's probably going to get a first or second round knockout, probably. Right?
Yeah, because there's only certain. I mean, he knows in MMA boxing, you don't learn the tricks like you do in boxing, and Roy knows all of them. You know what I mean? And that's going to be the telltale right there.
But unfortunately, with another win on his record, this is going to encourage him to continue.
I would be shocked if this encouraged him to continue. I have a feeling this is it. They called for his retirement after the fact, after his last fight.
Because he got knocked out in Russia. Remember that?
Right. And I think this is I don't think he goes on after this. I really don't. I think this is more of an end of the road kind of thing for him. I really do. I don't think he fights after this.
I hope you're right because he's training fighters now. He's got his own promotion company, and he works for HBO. What does he need to do this for?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Speaking of Russia, friend of the show, Deontay Wilder headed to Russia.
That's why I brought up the Russia thing, so we could fall right into this.
All right, there you go. Segue Robert. Deontay Wilder headed to Russia to defend the heavyweight championship. Due to losing the purse bid, Wilder is now headed to Russia to face Alexander Povetkin. Yeah, that's gonna be a tough outing for him, I think.
Do we have a date for that?
I believe we do. I believe we do. Let me see. We sure do it. I'll tell you that here in a minute here.
Okay.
What do you think of this, man? Do you think they're second guessing losing that purse bid?
Well,
they had to know it was coming, you know.
Well, here's my thing that I was going to fall into right here. The PBC has two parts of a heavyweight champion. By the Wilder fight, they could have none of the heavyweight champions because Charles Martin is not leaving the UK with that title.
No.
Could it be conceivable that Deontay Wilder, friend of the show, goes over to Russia and walks and leaves the ring empty-handed because Povetkin gets a hometown decision?
Possible, very possible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering what the PBC people are thinking of in both of these cases here. I know they both have financial incentives to go to both the UK and Russia. But you're basically walking into people's hometowns, and you could leave both hometowns empty-handed. How does
Povetkin is fighting next if he gets past Wilder and he wins a title?
Somebody as ridiculous as Shannon Briggs?
No, I think Tyson Fury snags him.
Okay, well, good for Tyson.
I think Tyson Fury snags him. Yeah. It tries to unify that title again. And then, it's setting up an All England, with Anthony Joshua.
Yeah. Well, I firmly believe in Joshua's case. Once he wins that title, he's going to hold it hostage, and he's going to make everybody come to the UK.
Yeah, isn't Eddie Hearn's the guy with Joshua, right? Eddie Hearn?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, that title ain't coming out of UK anytime soon.
I'm
very curious too, like why PBC would do that, but I mean they're making the best fights, they're making the best.
Well, I think one of the major issues we have here is the PBC thing. I wonder if there's some truth to the rumor that they're not doing well financially because if they have all the financial resources that they say they do, they should have blew this purse bid out of the water and forced Povetkin to come to the U.S.
Right.
I'm wondering if there's truth to the rumors that they're not doing well financially. I mean, Charles Martin, for example, Eric, is getting $5 million for punching his passport and going to the U.K.
Is he really? Wow.
Yeah. He's getting $5 million. To basically give that title to Joshua.
Yeah.
So you got to wonder, is all these time buys and all these legal fees that Al Haymon's had to pay for, is the financial purse coming home to roost? Because another thing to consider, ESPN, a major network which Al has bought time on, they don't have a show scheduled until June.
I don't understand that either. Yeah, I mean,
You don't even have anything scheduled on Spike, and we're already in March.
Well, no, April 1st on Spike is going to be the Bronner and Theophane.
That's the first time of the year for Spike.
Right.
I mean, doesn't that say something about the financial wherewithal that maybe they're having problems and maybe there's something to these lawsuits that are going to be heard any day now?
It's possible. I know Bob Arum has come out and said that he's interested in Crawford versus Broner. Again, I mean, given the fact that, you know, Top Rank has got that lawsuit against him, you know, or Bob Arum's got the lawsuit against him.
The thing about that is Bob and the other promoters, Oscar, now they can look at these purse bids and say, hey, we can be in the driver's seat. We can get some of these guys to fight. So I think it's highly likely that you see Broner win that fight on April 1st, and then he gets stuck in the ring with Crawford.
I don't know. We'll have to see. I know that the purse bid for the Wilder fight was $5 million. PBC bid $5 million, and in the Russian guy got it for like $7
million. I remember when Povetkin fought Klitschko, the same promoter bid $23 million.
They won it too, man. So they got some deep pockets over there, man, for sure.
And Klitschko went over to Russia, and of course Klitschko knocked out Povetkin, so he was able to keep his title. But no offense to Deontay here, but this is definitely the toughest opponent he's ever faced.
Yeah, I think so too. This is going to be a stiff test. That being said, I think Deontay beats him.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah,
because I don't like the way this looks, you know, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I agree. If it goes to the cards, man, you may be wondering, so yeah.
Yeah.
So you better get him out of there and get him out of there quick.
If I'm Deontay Wilder, I don't plan on 12 rounds. I get it over with as soon as humanly possible.
Absolutely.
Because if it goes 12 rounds, well, like The Rock says, do you smell what I'm cooking?
Exactly.
You know?
All right. So Showtime has announced their boxing schedule. Wait till you hear this, man. This is April 9th. April 9th, we're going to start off with Charles Martin versus Anthony Joshua.
I told you that they were going to pick that up.
Yeah. On the other card there, this is a good one, too. Lee Selby versus Eric Hunter, man. Lee Selby's a really good fighter, too. I love watching
him.
Yes, he is. April 16th, we have Gary Russell versus Patrick Hyland, and then Jose Pedraza will be in the co-main. They don't know who yet, but he'll be on the co-main on that one.
All right.
April 30th, Badu Jack versus Lucien Bute, and James DeGale versus Rogelio Medina on the undercard there.
Okay.
And then May 21st, we have Deontay Wilder versus Alexander Povetkin.
Okay.
And then June 11th, this was a shocker. Ruslan Provodnikov going to Showtime versus John Molina Jr. And that should be a good one.
I like that fight.
Yeah, I like it better than I like the Crawford fight. And then Demetrius Andrade versus Charles Hatley will be on that undercard. Ruslan, that one shocked me because Bob Arum was talking about Ruslan going to be next for Crawford. And I'm like, that's a horrible fight to begin with. You know, but I like Molina versus Provodnikov a lot better. So hopefully.
Because let's face it, I don't think either one of them got a whole lot left.
No, I don't think so either. That's why I think it's a good fight. You know, yeah, absolutely, man. And both guys come to fight. You know, June 25th, rescheduled.
Still on the phone, Mom. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. June 25th, rescheduled. Keith Thurman versus Sean Porter, and then on the undercard, Abner Morris versus Jesus Cuellar.
Okay. Now, will this be on CBS like it was supposed to be the first time around?
All of these are saying Showtime. All of these are saying Showtime. So
okay, so it must have been moved to Showtime.
Yeah,
then.
I'm wondering if it got moved to Showtime. And in now, the summer, to be announced, coming this summer, Leo Santa Cruz versus Carl Frampton, that's going to be the next one for both of those guys. That is going to be a dynamite fight.
Okay, I know the Porter Thurman fight was originally supposed to be in Connecticut. Do we have a site for that?
I do not.
Okay. All right. Interesting schedule. And I love the Santa Cruz Frampton fight.
Yeah.
About time Leo got some competition.
That's going to be a great, great fight, man. Can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Big time fight. Now we're going to round off today with Celestino Caballero. Police in Panama say the former IBF and WBA super bantamweight champion Celestino Caballero, this was very close, incidentally, to being the train wreck of the week. Had they not falsified documents and three fights not got canceled, this would have been the train wreck of the week, all right? Police say former super bantamweight champion Celestino Caballero has been arrested with what authorities suspect is about 10 kilos of cocaine. 10. 10. You know, all right, Tony Montana, you know.
We've named the train wreck of the week Adrian Broner, the Adrian Broner train wreck of the week. Well, there's four nominees here, and they're all good ones.
Yeah, the worst part about it, an official at the prosecutor's office says police found 10 packets in the vehicle, each with about a kilo of suspected cocaine. So the official was not authorized to talk to the press and spoke on a condition of anonymity.
Yeah,
that's good luck with that one, buddy.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Yeah. Close runner-up for our train wreck of the week, man.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, what a way to end the show, hey?
Yeah, right? It's always good to end on a high note, no pun intended. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Ringside Reporter. As always, you can catch Robert on Twitter at Ringside Robert, or you can call Ringside Robbie's Corner at 773-572-7781 and listen to all the podcasts and history lessons. And we'll be putting that documentary on there tomorrow, as well as all three Ali Frazier fights on Robbie's Corner tomorrow.
Also, guys, if you really want to get a hold of me, it's really best if you just call the number, because I don't have any way of checking the Twitter, because the person that helps me with that, he's got different things going on in his life. So if you really want to get a hold of me, the best way to do it is to call the Boxing Corner at 773-572-7781. And if you need me to respond to anything, I will definitely do it. I will answer your question or whatever you want to leave there on. Because, I'm sure there are people that have been sending me messages for several months over there on the Twitter, and I have no way to access it, so.
Robert's a superstar now. He doesn't go by Twitter like the rest of us. Twitter and Facebook, that's not good. You got to call him directly.
Hey.
Call Robert directly.
That's how Eric got this show started. So
that's right.
There you go.
We're old school. We're old school
that.
But me, I'm at Ringside73 on Twitter, and we'll catch you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Ringside Reporter Podcast. Check us out on the web at www.ringsidereporter.com, on Twitter at Ringside73, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Ringside73. Subscribe to us on iTunes.